The Tom Woods Show, episode 1136.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here. The Tom Woods Show.
Folks, Bob Murphy and I are doing it again. Contra Cruise 2018. You know you want to join us. You've seen how much fun it is. Everybody who's joined us absolutely raves about it. It is the vacation of a lifetime. Check it out at ContraCruise.com.
Hey, everybody. Tom Woods here. A little carpeting update for you. Told you I'd be getting my home office carpeted to deal with this horrible audio problem, and that should solve it. Well, came time for the carpeting day, and the carpet people told me, well, we rolled out the carpet that we ordered, and there was a huge, I guess, flaw right down the middle of it. Couldn't be fixed. So they have to order me more carpet. So for the past couple of episodes, I've been sitting here under two bedspreads here. One of them is a Hello Kitty bedspread. Another one's just a pattern. And it's dampened down some of the echo, which is good. Not so good for my dignity, but is there any length I won't go to for you folks listening in? Anyway, you didn't even need to know that, but that's how transparent I want to be on the show. Most of the episodes are done without being under a Hello Kitty bedspread, but this is a bedspread episode. And joining me for that is Dave Smith. Dave Smith is back here on the show. If you don't know Dave Smith, I'm telling you, this is a guy you're going to want to follow. In fact, I just had somebody in my private group, which you can join at supportinglisteners.com, by the way. And Dave is a member. Dave's a member at supportinglisteners.com. And in my private group, somebody said, Dave Smith is my favorite discovery via the Tom Woods Show. He's tremendous. He's the host of Part of the Problem. Part of the Problem is a great podcast. He also had, with his Libertas special, he had the number one comedy album on iTunes for 3 solid weeks in 2017. Everything is coming up Dave Smith this year, and I couldn't be happier for him. Dave, welcome back.
Oh, thanks for having me, Tom. It's a thrill. My favorite show.
Oh, you're so kind. I always enjoy talking to you. Anytime I'm in New York, we got to have lunch, and it's always great. And it could make a good podcast episode, but I don't know. We probably say enough private things. We better not try that. But in principle, it's always a great conversation. You've been doing really, really well. Every time I talk to you, it's the third time you've been on the show, and your star rises significantly between each appearance. Now, I can't take all the credit for that, but but I'll just say I'm very, very happy to see it. Now, in particular, you got quite an interesting gig because you have made quite a number of appearances on CNN alongside S.E. Cupp on her panel. Mm-hmm. What's the name of the show?
It's S.E. Cupp Unfiltered, and yeah, I'm a contributor to the show, so I'm on quite a bit.
Yeah, that is really, really great. In fact, I made one of my emails out of one of your appearances. Now, I sometimes badger people who listen. If you're not on my email list, I'm going to come over there and smack you in the face, and when I email you, open it and read it because it's good. I send you guys good stuff, and one of them was about heroic Dave Smith who goes on CNN and just drops truth bombs like he's Ron Paul 2.0. Because there was that one episode in particular where you gave like a 60-second briefing on foreign policy. You remember the particular one I have in mind?
Yes.
And it got written up on Zero Hedge.
That's right. I remember, of course, because I made the Tom Woods newsletter, which was a very big deal to me.
There you go.
So let me just say that I love the newsletter. And also, just to correct you earlier, you said I've been on 3 times, but I count every single time you air one of my episodes on your feed. I count that as an episode as well.
That's true.
So it's a few more times than that.
It is. Yeah, you're right. Yeah, you're like a regular now.
Yeah, that's right. I'm up there. I'm competing with Malice.
Yeah. Okay. So tell me about... Just tell people who didn't see it or who, heaven forbid, didn't read my newsletter, which they can jump on at tomsfreebooks.com, what exactly happened that day, and was there any part of you that was slightly nervous, or did you know there are enough Ron Paulians out there that are just going to be shocked and staggered that I got on CNN and said this, that I'm more pumped than I am nervous?
I was definitely more pumped than nervous, but also this was, you know, I went on the Contra Cruise, so I spent a week on a boat with Scott Horton,
and
nobody is prepared to see me in a foreign policy debate after that. But yeah, no, I mean, it's like, it's crazy because this was the thing, you know, which is the kind of generic story, and I've mentioned before on the show, but I was brought into this libertarian world. My initial moment was the Ron Paul Giuliani moment. So this has always been like my issue, the thing that attracted me over to the anti-war and the libertarian world the most. And, you know, Essie Cupp, God bless her, she's just out of her mind on this issue. And it's the particular clip that you're talking about, this was when, so this was a couple months back, and it was when, at the time, the Secretary of State, who is no longer involved, but he came out with his plan, which was that we have to stay in Syria to both defeat ISIS and overthrow Assad. Which, of all the plans for these wars, it's the most ridiculous one. It's like the easiest one to bat down. So I felt like I was set up. I mean, you really couldn't hand someone a better position to be in where, you know, what are we looking at? Like, after these last six interventions have been an absolute disaster, we're looking for a seventh one with the most ridiculous plan of all to intervene in a civil war and take out both sides. But yeah, I was able to get off a good 60-second clip, and Zero Hedge ran it, and I got some really great feedback online for it. So it was, yeah, I love that stuff, and I enjoy the battle very much.
And it seems like your podcast has also exploded. Part of the problem.
Yeah, part of the problem's been doing very good, and you know, you can take a lot of credit for it, Tom, because you had me on before any of these other people were having me on. But yeah, from doing your show and I did the Joe Rogan podcast a couple times, and then the stuff Fox News was using me a little bit for a while. They really liked me when Hillary Clinton was running, and I wouldn't hold back on trashing Hillary Clinton. You know, yeah, just everything. I did Stefan Molyneux's show recently, and it just kind of picked up, and now we've got like a great little audience. We're like we're like the Tom Woods show if we did less homework with more cursing.
Well, anyway, I love it, and I think you do a tremendous job. I also want to point out to people, I have a lot of listeners who are interested in starting podcasts or have just started a podcast, or they've started a blog or whatever, and the key problem is, how do you get people to listen to you? How do you get people to visit what you're doing? And you've just given us what, to my mind, is really the best answer, which is to get yourself onto other podcasts. Do what you have to do to get on there. Now, in your case, I was practically begging you to come on, so you didn't have to ask. But but there's no harm in asking, and leveraging other people's audiences is an excellent way to build up your own.
Yeah, well, I mean, one of the – you know, I get the question all the time. I'm sure you do too. But listeners of the podcast will be asking me all the time, like, what other great libertarian podcasts are there? Or what other, you know, what's a great book on this? What's a great place to learn about this? So it's like the audience that we're talking to, at least a large percentage of them, they're looking for more content on this topic. So yeah, to me, that seems like the best marketing strategy.
Now, some of my listeners have, of course, heard every single time Dave Smith's been on the show, but not all of them. So for the sake of the newcomers, let's just start off with maybe a 1 to 2 minute overview about your background, how you came to be a crazy extremist like us, stuff like that.
Yeah, well, I mean, I kind of hinted at it before, but yeah, I mean, I'm born and raised in New York City. I was always kind of a left-wing guy. I mean, I wasn't super political, but I just, you know, that's just the correct thing to be in New York City. I was never one of the crazy lefties, which is, you know, it wasn't quite as insane back when I was in the world, which is like under George W. Bush. So the left had some reasonable things that I was drawn to, like, you know, the Iraq War was a bad idea and the Patriot Act isn't good and stuff like that. And then in 2007, I just happened to be watching that Republican debate where with what people call the Giuliani moment, but I hate that term. It was the Ron Paul moment where Ron Paul just heroically slapped down Rudy Giuliani. And I was just so intrigued. I was like, who the heck is that guy? And I just started looking more and more into him. And eventually I found, shortly after I found you and Peter Schiff. And then you kept mentioning something about this guy, Murray Rothbard. So I looked him up. And then, you know, once you find Murray Rothbard, it's like this rabbit hole that you just get sucked into. And I've been obsessed with this stuff ever since. And then, you know, I was already doing stand-up comedy. And so then, you know, it started kind of bleeding into the comedy world, and a lot of my material started being about how ridiculous this whole system is. And yeah, then I started podcasting shortly after that. And it's, you know, there's an interesting thing about this, having this kind of anarcho-capitalist, Rothbardian, libertarian perspective, where it gives you, it's almost like, you know, you're living in a time, you're like in the Middle Ages or something, or where everybody else thinks that, you know, it, like, disease is caused by clouds in the sky, and you understand that there's germs involved. And like, you just have, you have this insight that nobody else has, and you can jump into this world and just see things in a way that none of them seem to be able to. And so, yeah, I've really enjoyed it, and I get to sit down and talk to my heroes like you, and it's, I've been able to build a fun career off of it.
I hate to, almost hate to ask you a question like this that might put you in an uncomfortable spot, because I don't want you to feel like you have to denounce people in your field, but I am curious to know about your overall impression of your fellow comics, because the impression I get, let's say from mutual friends of ours, is that the comedy world has gotten noticeably more schoolmarmish and condescending and lecture to you for using the wrong words, even though these very people 5 years ago were saying all kinds of things that they, you know, they would put you in prison for saying today. There's no sense of, there's no self-awareness among these people at all. Do you feel like you are among wolves, or do you feel like, look, I'm an amiable enough guy, I'm not going to be in their crosshairs?
Well, I mean, well, first of all, I'm not uncomfortable about it at all to trash the state of comedy right now. I mean, I'm absolutely disgusted by it. And really, it's like whatever this like left-wing social justice warrior poison is, it has really seeped into the comedy world. And yeah, it's like what you said, even when you say just a few years ago, they would say whatever horrible thing they could think of. I mean, they still say it. It's the typical kind of like left-wing thing where they can say the most horrific things they want to, but it's within the rules, and you're not allowed to say anything that's outside of the rules. And yeah, it's just awful. And to see, like, I know you just recently had on a mutual friend of ours, Owen Benjamin. I mean, I saw comedians on Twitter cheering the fact that Owen Benjamin was getting censored online because, you know, he doesn't have the same views they have. And they have this kind of freedom where they know they can say whatever they want to. Like, you can call NRA members child murderers. That's not a problem at all. But if he fires off with like a no-no word, then he's got to be censored. So I'm disgusted by it. There are some really good comedians who push back against it. But yeah, I mean, for me personally, I think I established myself a little bit before the Donald Trump era, before this thing had gotten completely out of hand. And then I just, the world that I'm in is, you know, a lot of it's like online and podcasting and stuff like that. So I don't know. They really can't touch me. But I personally haven't had a lot of trouble with it. But maybe that's also something about my style because, you know, I'm not like inflammatory on Twitter the same way a guy like Owen is. So I don't know. But I've personally, although I had, you know, last year I got a bunch of nasty tweets and things like that when I was having some alt-right figures on my podcast because, you know, I mean, I don't know. I figured I thought the alt-right phenomenon was interesting enough to have some conversations with people, and I got a lot of heat for that. But, you know, I don't know. Like I said, I got into this thing because I was so impressed with Ron Paul and then, you know, guys like yourself and Murray Rothbard. And to me, like the thing that was so impressive about Ron Paul, well, it was like two things. It was like, number one, he was telling the truth. And number two, he could care less if he was going to get booed out of the arena. Like he was very prepared to just say what he had to say and get booed out of the arena. And that's it. So be it. That's fine. And I've always kind of appreciated that. And so I'm fine with it. I'm going to tell the truth like I see it. And, you know, if people can call me whatever they want to.
I guess what's demoralizing to me in particular about this is that I think of stand-up comedians as being people who are willing to give the whole world the middle finger.
Yeah.
And so they, of all people, should be banding together, whether they like each other or not. They should say, look, one thing we can agree on is that comedians ought to be free to tell jokes.
Right.
You know,
right.
Can we at least agree on that? Well, they should be free to tell jokes. And you know what? Another thing, we have a mutual friend we both met on the Contra Cruise who plays poker. Mm-hmm. And he plays in professional tournaments and everything. And I was shocked when I had him on the show when he said that generally poker players, professional poker players tend to be on the left. And I said, but But they're getting regulated, like, the, you know, online poker and stuff. They're getting regulated like crazy by the government, who the government ruined people's livelihoods. I have a friend who actually moved to Mexico so he could get his freedom back when it came to playing online poker. You would think these would be the people who would, of all people, stand together and say, look, we can't allow, we can't have these fantasy versions of what the state is all about. We know the state is force, and we're not going to let them ruin our profession. No, instead it turns into these mealy-mouthed conversations that go something like this. Well, you know, we do need some regulation. what is the matter? You know, what is the matter with these people? I mean, is there some people, it's like at some point in their lives, they have like a spine removal surgery or something.
Yeah, well, I've just come to the conclusion that if leftists were logically consistent, they wouldn't be leftists. So it's like, yeah, you're right. I mean, there were like SWAT raids on private poker clubs in New York City. This is going back like a decade or something like that. But yeah, I mean, it's insane. And like it's for stand-up comedians to be ever advocating that people can't say offensive things. It's just so ridiculous. I mean, it's such a contradiction in everything that they stand for and or should stand for. So yeah, it's like it breaks my heart. It's, you know, I remember back you know, when people a few months ago, it seems like 80 years ago now, but back in December when the net neutrality debate was all the rage, and I see comedians actually advocating that the FCC should come in and regulate the internet. And it's like, could you guys just think this through for 5 seconds? Like, this is just not how things are supposed to go. But I don't know. Truthfully speaking, the mix of Obama and Trump did so much to destroy comedy in this country. And I hope we can like recover from it. There's, like I said, there's still some great ones out there. But it's like Obama made them all just like, you know, we're like praising the leader. Like comedians are now walking around, they're like high school kids with a "my principal is number one" t-shirt on. And then Trump just made them so angry that they're just detached from reality. And the combination has just been really bad for comedy. And it's sad for me to see.
Somebody's asking about whether you would do a course on comedy writing. And before you answer that, let me remind people who were on the Contra Cruise, some of whom are listening right now, and for the sake of those who for some reason did not join us, you can remedy that this year, by the way. Dave Smith's coming back aboard the Contra Cruise, so check it out at ContraCruise.com. It's the most fun you can possibly imagine. That breakout session you did with folks certainly was made, I think, even nicer by the fact that the New York subway map was on the ceiling of that room. I mean, that was just a bizarre coincidence. But you handled questions so well, and it was so interesting. And I'm pretty sure your view kind of was that there isn't so much a science to comedy, and it's not so clear that it could be teachable. But yet, after sitting in there with you for an hour, I walked away having learned a lot. And one of the things I learned was that Dave has mastered this science so much he doesn't even know it's a science. So I actually think that if we do another session like that this year, I would record it and give it to you to use. You could give it away as a bonus to people who support you, or, you know, people who subscribe at Gas Digital or something like that, because it would be well worth it. It would be something they could get access to nowhere else. It's an instant product for you, and I'd give it to you for free. Anyway, let's go back to this. Is this anything that piques your interest, like how to write a joke kind of thing?
Yeah, I mean, I don't, I'll be honest, I'm a little turned off to the idea, because like I said, you know, like as you were kind of mentioning, my initial reaction to like a class on comedy is like, well, no, the whole point of comedy is we don't want to be sitting in class. We want to be, you know, we're like in the back row making fun of the class. But yeah, there is a lot of things that I've picked up in my days in stand-up comedy, but I'd be more interested in just, you know, I did enjoy that Q&A session very much, and I'd be more interested in just like talking to people. And yeah, I'll put that out if you want to record it this year, that'd be fun. But I don't know about the idea of actually having like a formal class. I think to me, comedy is one of those things where like you have to just start doing it. And then you kind of, you know, you ask other comedians for help on stuff, or you ask them for, you know, you kind of learn little things about the craft. But I don't know. Every time I've ever seen an actual comedy class, it's usually taught by some like hack failed comedian who's just kind of like charging money for from young wannabe comics to pay his rent. So I don't know. I'm a little turned off to the idea, but I did enjoy that Q&A very much.
Yeah, honestly, it was one of my favorite events of the whole cruise. I just kept thinking, this thing just can't get any better.
The cruise, by the way, for people who don't know, it is the most fun thing in the world. Like, if there is any way you can make it to the Contra Cruise, do yourself the favor and come on out. Yeah, it was just so much fun. I was planning out the next Contra Cruise on the ship last year.
Yeah, that's and it was fun. We were sitting together at one of the bars or whatever, and somebody who wasn't even in our group walked by and recognized you and said, "Oh, it's Dave Smith."
That's right. I forgot about that.
Yeah, wasn't that fun? Yeah. So there you go. Dave Smith, the celebrity on board with us. It was really great. Who are some of your favorite comedians and what's so great about them?
Well, I've got a lot. I always really loved Dave Chappelle, although I was a little disappointed in the last two specials that he put out. But I just love funny across the board. I was a huge Jerry Seinfeld fan, loved the show Seinfeld. I really liked Jon Stewart and Stephen Colbert when they were on Comedy Central, when it was during like the Colbert Report during the George W. Bush years, I thought was like hysterical. And I've always, you know, I even like when he's on, although I'll find him infuriating at times, but Bill Maher would make me laugh. And I really always loved comedians who would kind of have that quality of just bringing all the absurdity of our society into focus. And anyone who can really just make you gut laugh while making you realize a really like powerful point. I always thought there was something so cool about that. I love the South Park guys. I think they do an incredible job. But I've always been a huge, huge fan of comedy. And that's partly going back to what I was saying before, why it hurts so much to see these comedians just become, you know, leftist robots.
I'm not trying to create more competition for you, but how does somebody break into comedy?
Well, yeah, it's impossible to do, guys. Sorry, it's all over. It's no competition allowed. You know, honestly, I'm in New York City, and that's where I started. And there's like a ton of open mics around New York City, and it's really as simple as you just got to go there and do it and keep doing it. And before you know it, you meet people who run in those circles, you meet people who book shows and stuff like that. So it's a really unstructured world where you just kind of have to like do it yourself and keep hustling.
When's your next comedy special coming out?
Well, I'm working on it now. It's really just a matter of me building the hour of material. So I put out my first comedy special last year, Libertas. If you want to go download that, you can go to gasdigitalnetwork.com. Or I think you have a link for that special as well.
Yeah, I think is it tomwoods.com/Libertas maybe? I don't know. I'll check it. I think it is. Yeah, it should be. It's whatever thing you're looking for, it's always tomwoods.com/that thing.
So yeah, I've been in the process of building up the next hour. So it's just a matter of getting to the point where I'm happy with the hour of material. I'm thinking I'm about a year away from doing it. So still got some time on that one.
Do you invite friends to come to that recording, or how does that work?
Well, I put it out. Yeah, that was for the recording of the special. I had friends and followers of the podcast and stuff like that. So I had a lot of I packed it out with my people.
I'd love to be there. I'm just inviting myself over.
Tom, of course you're invited. Of course.
Oh, wouldn't that be awesome? All right. So that's good. What would you say? I mean, again, I know we could be talking about libertarianism, but, you know, sometimes you got to just talk about other things. You know, there are just other things in life. And
sure.
I think what you do is so fascinating. And I wonder, I mean, obviously the best thing in the world must be when you just absolutely kill it. You walk off that stage and people, you just know. They're going to be talking about it on the way home. You were the best one of the night. They just love what you just did. And of course, you know, when it's not so good, I guess it's not so good. But are there particularly rewarding things about it and particularly frustrating things about it?
Yeah, well, yeah, there's a lot of both. And that's one of the things that I think I was very drawn to about the comedy world. I mean, it's you get your but they have a, you know, like a symbiotic relationship with each other, because part of the reason why it's, you know, killing is so great is because you're risking it going bad. So that's why there's kind of that reward. But there's nothing, nothing like killing with a new joke. That's just what, that's the best feeling in the world, when you've got something, you're not sure about it yet, but you think it's good, and it gets up and it kills. And nothing worse than a mild reception.
Yeah.
Like I'll take bombing over, I'll take offending an audience. Like that's fine by me. And you know, I'll take that over just kind of a, ha ha ha. That's the worst. That leaves you just feeling like nothing, but you gotta, you know, you gotta get a bunch of both.
Yeah, no kidding. Now, there are other comedians out there who have maybe like a libertarian slant to them, but I'm not sure that there really is another Dave Smith. Even if there were, you would have no interest in telling us about that person necessarily. But I really feel like you kind of dominate this area, and you do it without trying to be the libertarian comedian. Because I would – in the same way that when people try to make libertarian movies – they always come out wooden and stilted and dumb and predictable, and I just can't stand them. But whereas on the other hand, if it's a movie that's just, you know, maybe it has a libertarian theme in it or something, or but that wasn't the primary primary purpose was just to make a good movie that people would enjoy. Because that people are not going to movies to be propagandized. If you are, then I think you don't understand what the movies are. And likewise, they don't go to a comedy club because they want to learn about the non-aggression principle.
Right.
But at the same time – so in other words, your job first and foremost is to be funny. But you want to balance that though by being funny in a way that still nevertheless does advance kind of semi-forbidden ways of thinking.
Yeah, well, the way you said it there is just perfect. It's like the job first and foremost is to be funny. That's it. That nothing comes above that. And I was lucky because I was doing comedy for a few years before I became a libertarian. And then even when I was first introduced to libertarianism, it took me a couple years before I was completely sold. I was just really interested in it for a while. So I'd been doing comedy for years already. And so I had already kind of learned the idea of like your job is to go up there and be hilarious and kill. Like that's the job. And then I realized it wasn't going to be, you know, it was an easier transition for me to go, okay, well now it just kind of naturally happened for me, because it's like, well, these are the topics I'm really interested in. So of course I'm going to end up talking about them. But I never approach things from the point of view of like, oh, I have this point I want to make. Let me bring that to stage. It'll always just be like, if I happen to be reading about whatever, And there's something that's absurd or something that's hilarious in it, it's like, oh, okay, so I can use that. That's what's really funny about this. So it's always I agree with you. I think it's like people suffer from like Ayn Rand syndrome, where they want to, you know, it's like because she did somehow pull it off with her novels, but you're not going to pull it off the way she did. It's like this idea that you're going to write a novel that's constantly just beating you over the head with the message. You're way better off to just like create the art. You are a libertarian, so that will come out and you can kind of nudge at your points. But the role of entertainment or the role of like comedy to me is to, number one, make you laugh. And then if anything, I can maybe nudge you with an idea or nudge you with something that's absurd. But, you know, nobody wants to hear their stand-up comedian lecturing them about like the business cycle or something like that. It's just not going
to
work.
Yeah, no, horrible. Nobody wants to hear about the business cycle. Let me ask you a libertarian question, though. Somebody in my private Facebook group, which you are a member of. I'm glad to have you. But I told you you are forbidden to look at any of these questions because that would suck all the life out of this.
That's right. And I followed.
That's right. And I've only taken a couple of them. But somebody says that you and Jason Stapleton may have had a disagreement over the path to liberty in how rapidly it would happen. Could it happen in a series of small steps, or would it have to be a series of large jumps? And I think you were the large jump guy. Is that stating it accurately?
Yeah, that's fairly accurate. If you guys, we just did this when I was out in Los Angeles last week. We did like a meetup, and then we recorded a podcast with it was me, Jason Stapleton, and Mark and Brian from the Lions of Liberty, and they put it up on the Lions of Liberty feed. If you guys want to go check that out, great podcast. And so, yeah, I think that's a fairly accurate kind of summary of what happened. So Jason seemed to have the idea that we got of kind of like, you know, the bus has been going in the direction of more and more statism. We got to turn this thing around and move it toward less and less statism. And I just, you know, I'm not opposed to that. I just think practically that the kind of, you know, whatever the boiling frog metaphor, I don't think that ever works in our favor. And I think that if you look at things like, you know, the like abolishing slavery or something like that, I mean, yeah, you can make the argument that the slave trade stopped first and then it, but to me, it seems more like it's big, radical change. If you look at the collapse of the Soviet Union, it happened very quickly. You know, I think the role of libertarians is not to sit here and say, oh, well, you know, we should cut top marginal tax rates by 3%. I mean, we have the Republicans doing that. We have the LP. These guys have been doing that for years. Where does that ever get us? So I just feel like it's like we should stake out the correct position, which of course is anarcho-capitalism, and fight like heck to get that.
I agree with you, and part of the reason is there's a huge bureaucracy in place that exists to perpetuate itself. It does not exist to make my life better or your life better. It exists to perpetuate itself. So even if temporarily there is some little rollback, these people's whole existence is intended to bring that back. Whatever we rolled back, they're going to be working 24 hours a day to reverse that. And so if you're going to try 100 little tiny changes, well, you've got people working 24 hours a day to reverse those changes. So what we need is not to say those changes are pointless, we shouldn't bother. If somebody's doing the work to bring that change about and it happens, I support it, but I'm not going to delude myself into thinking this is a permanent victory. Instead, the big thing would be something needs to happen to wipe that bureaucracy out, whether there's a financial crisis or a fiscal crisis, more like it. The funds just aren't there. Something like that. There's a tax revolt or there's some kind of revolt at the state level or whatever that helps to dismantle the very bureaucracy that would be spending all its time trying to reverse all the good work you're doing. We would need a big move like that if we want to have really, really permanent changes.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. And there's lots of examples you could look to for stuff like this. So it's like, you know, you can, and again, like you said, there's nothing wrong with like being like, okay, that was a good move. Like, it, you know, we had that military sequester a few years back. And it's like, okay, so we slowed down the rate of growth in defense spending. But then Trump comes in and just ups it by another $65 billion or whatever it was in this. So none of that really sticks. And of course, like you said, all the incentives for all of these bureaucracies is to get more and more funding. So they end up winning out. And like, it's fine. I mean, I have no problem saying like I'm glad Trump did the tax cuts. I'm glad there's been some deregulation in the energy sector. Like those things are good, but it's not getting us where we need to go. It's just not. And back to the Jason Stapleton thing, the thing that, and I agreed with Jason on a lot. I think Jason's great. I'm not like trashing him or anything.
Yep, absolutely. But
the one thing that he said that I did take a little bit of exception with was when he said something about Murray. He said, you know, Murray Rothbard, for as brilliant as the guy was, he was like, what did he ever actually get done? I mean, and this is like almost what they used to say about Ron Paul, kind of like, well, what legislation did he pass or what? So he said, you know, what did Rothbard do? And then I responded, and to Jason's credit, he did say that I made a good point afterward. But I said, I was like, yeah, what did Murray Rothbard do? And I go to this crowd, we had close to like 200 people there. And I go to the crowd and I said, hey, how many of you guys have been inspired by Murray Rothbard? And it's like huge cheers. I mean, half the crowd's wearing a Murray Rothbard shirt.
Right.
And I said, how many of you guys have been inspired by Milton Friedman? And it's like crickets. And I go, you know who Milton Friedman inspired? All of the modern neocons. He's being celebrated right now on some, you know, like National Review meetup. So it's like, you know, I don't know. I just don't. So Milton Friedman was a big believer in this, like, oh, let's kind of win this game of inches, right? So instead of just advocating for the correct libertarian policy, it'd be like, well, let's have a school voucher system instead of privatizing schools, or let's have a basic income instead of welfare, like all these things. And what ends up happening? I mean, what Milton Friedman ideas actually were successful? Well, the withholding tax. That is what he actually got. He got the war in Iraq, which he was a big champion of. It's like basically all his bad concessions got in, and none of the good ideas did. Minimum wage laws are still around. So I'd rather go the Rothbard route.
Yeah, no kidding. And I might also add, we could say the same thing that Jason was saying about Rothbard, about John Locke. What did John Locke ever do? He wrote a couple of books, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's right.
That's all he ever did. But yet, for some reason, we still talk about John Locke and we don't talk about King Louis the 11th very
much. That's right. That's right. You know? That's a great point. Yeah.
So, all right. Well, tell me about your schedule for this year in case folks would like to come out and see you. I mean, of course, you tend to be in the New York City area, so people should check you. Where would they check out your schedule online?
Well, in terms of the New York City dates, I usually don't promote those too much. But like, if you tweet at me, I'm always getting up in New York City, and I'll let you know where I am. Usually, I like to just kind of get in front of random crowds so I can kind of work out my material.
Yeah, that's a good point.
I bring it to my people, you know, when it's kind of ready to go. But you know, I've been on the road a bit for the last couple months, so I'm in New York for a little bit now. But you know, I'm always I'm opening up regularly at the Soho Forum, which Bob Murphy is debating at, and you're going to be hanging out at next week. And of course I'll be on the Contra Cruise this year, and I'm going back. I was just in Boston, but I'm going back there in a couple months. But if you follow me on Twitter, I always promote all my road gigs.
Okay. And incidentally, by the time this airs, actually, it'll be the day of the debate that I'm going to see you at. Yeah, today, whatever date this is, April 16th, 2018, will be at the Soho Forum. It's going to be Bob Murphy versus George Selgin with Dave opening. So it's going to be tremendous. Just go up to Gene Epstein and say, Tom Woods, you get a free drink at the bar. Details at thesohoforum.org. What is your Twitter handle or whatever they call it?
It's at Comic Dave Smith.
Okay, good. But I also had in mind, I think, are you going to Porkfest this year?
I'm still trying to work out the details for that. So we'll see. I'm not sure I'm going to be able to.
Okay. All right. So who knows? I mean, we do know that a major, you know where you will be going this year. Major part of your schedule, of course, will be the Contra Cruise, which I hope people will join us on. All right. I'm going to let you get going, but I'm looking forward to seeing you tonight. And that's going to be a lot of fun. I'm glad that Gene has got you opening for these events, because makes it 10 times better if you ask me. I mean, otherwise it's going to be a whole night of Murphy versus Selgin on fractional reserve banking. What the heck? So anyway, and I'm glad everything's going so well for you. The podcast, the CNN gig, and your personal life seems to be going pretty well. I mean, this is like the year of Dave Smith, and it couldn't be happening to a nicer guy. Thanks so much, Dave.
Oh, thanks so much, Tom. It's always a thrill and an honor to be on your show.
All right, everybody, do jump onto my email list. You say, I don't want any emails, but you'll like my emails. That's the difference. My emails are notorious for being, notorious has negative connotations, but they're really notorious for being good and juicy and fun and devastating and crushing. So you see them come into your inbox, you say, I got to open this thing. This is going to give me a little bit of joy in the middle of the day. So hop on there at tomsfreebooks.com, because you can get a book while you do it. Or in particular, you could go to wrongaboutguns.com and get my ebook called Your Facebook Friends Are Wrong About Guns. All right, what the heck is the episode tomorrow? I don't even remember. I've done them all in advance so I could go on vacation and be in New York, and I don't know what the heck tomorrow is. It's not that it wasn't memorable. I just don't know the order of anything anymore. But the thing is, you know you're going to get a precious gem every day, so whatever it is going to be great. I'll see you tomorrow.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit TomWoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.